This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. University of Alabama Professor Emeritus John Boland says that fixing long-term systemic problems with poverty requires addressing a shortage of hope first. Boland will speak on Tuesday at Western Michigan University. His address is titled Expecting Poverty and Violence: How Expectations Shape Underclass Youth. John Boland, thank you very much for being with us.
Certainly.
So when you talk about addressing that shortage of hope, what causes that to begin with, and how do you get at it if you're going to fix some of these problems of poverty and violence in urban areas?
One study that we did looked at several things that predicted feelings of hopelessness. And I should say that those feelings of hopelessness are really quite high in the inner city neighborhoods that we studied. Just by way of comparison, the levels of hopelessness that we found were about 4 to 5 times higher than what is found in typical studies of hopelessness in middle-class areas. It is roughly 2 to 3 times higher than what other people have found for adolescents who are emotionally troubled and receiving counseling. And it's almost 75% as high as for middle-class adolescents who have been institutionalized because they've tried to commit suicide.
And what areas are you studying specifically? Where is this data coming from?
This is from a number of neighborhoods in Mobile, Alabama, and its neighboring city, Pritchard, Alabama.
And this is the Mobile Youth Survey, which you conducted over many years, correct?
That is correct.
So tell us some more things that you found from this survey, and what did it tell you about the conditions that people are living in and what their expectations are?
Okay. First off, we looked at predictors of feelings of hopelessness, and two things stood out, really. One was lack of connectedness, that people who felt that they weren't connected to their neighborhood, to religion, to other institutions, tended to feel more hopeless than those who were connected. And second, adolescents who had experienced disruption in their lives were more likely to feel hopeless. So those are two things that would likely predict hopelessness and that I would see as ways of trying to change levels of hopelessness, to improve connectedness and to reduce disruption in people's lives.
The youth survey work started when? About 2000?
1998. We received funding from the City of Mobile and the Mobile Housing Board and the City of Pritchard to conduct a survey of youths just to try to get some idea of what the conditions were. And we brought a number of students, probably 12 students from the University of Alabama, down to Mobile for the summer. And we went out and interviewed probably about 1,700, almost 1,800 youths from the lowest income neighborhoods in Mobile. And just kind of an indication of the poverty level. According to the 1990 census, these neighborhoods had a poverty rate of over 70%, and the median household income in these neighborhoods was right at $5,000.
Did you find any significant change over time? Did the situation get better? Did it get worse, or did it stay about the same?
It depends on which things we were looking at, but one interesting result that we did find. We looked at what happened after Obama was elected, because Obama's message of hope was important and really addressed what we were looking at. Probably just as important, the election of an African-American president may well have been an important symbolic factor for these African-American youth. Probably 90-some percent, 98% of the 99% of the youth that we interviewed were either African-American or mixed race, African-American or Caucasian. And what we found was that after Obama's election, there was actually a reduction in hopelessness. There was an improvement in self-worth, and there was an improvement in the expectations that people had for their futures.
Have you found anything else which helps get at hopelessness? Are there other things, perhaps public policy changes or something that perhaps nonprofit groups have done, which get at the issue of hopelessness in these very poor urban areas?
I think a large issue is that most of the programs that have been developed in an attempt to address feelings of hopelessness or other risk factors at an individual level. I know that we receive funding for a substance abuse treatment program in these neighborhoods from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration in Washington. And we were required to kind of focus on individual substance abuse treatment issues, meaning do kind of cognitive behavioral therapy with individuals. And my belief is that regardless of how good the treatment program is, if it is the neighborhood that is creating the risk, then trying to fix an individual but keep them living in the same neighborhood isn't going to be very effective. And that you really have to do something to try to change the neighborhood. And I think that's critical. Again, go to this street code idea. If people believe that the neighborhood is dangerous, trying to convince them not to carry a gun or another weapon isn't going to be very effective because it would put them at risk. And I even question whether it would be ethically viable to try to convince kids not to carry weapons in an environment where they may get hurt if they don't carry weapons. So the only thing that you can do is try to change the environment, try to change the neighborhood, rather than trying to change the individual but leave the environment the same.
In other words, if the neighborhood truly is unsafe, trying to convince people that it is probably not, at the end of the day, a very effective prescription. Another, you have to make the neighborhood somewhat safer in order to get people thinking that it's okay and they can walk the streets relatively assured that there's not going to be a problem. Is that what we're trying to get at here with making people feel better about the neighborhood they live in?
That's right. Just trying to get them to feel better about themselves or feel better about the neighborhood without changing the environment. Now, there's a reason they don't feel good about themselves, and that is largely because they're living in a really difficult environment, and that has an effect on the individual and how the individual feels. So trying to change the individual without addressing the environment is just not going to be very effective, I believe.
I'm wondering about the students who you have working on this youth survey, and do their perceptions of why people end up in poverty and what some of the solutions are change over time as they meet these people and perhaps learn their stories about what happened to them along the way? Does that also do something for the students who might not come from this same background themselves?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that I tell the students, I'm talking in the present tense, but the study has been over now for a couple of years, but we had a week of training at the beginning of each summer, and I would tell the students that if they knew less about poverty when they went home than they did when they came, that it would be an entirely successful experience. In other words, a lot of the preconceptions that they had and a lot of the understandings that they had were probably overly simplistic, and that poverty and the creation of poverty and the effects of poverty are much more complicated than they really understood, and that by being out with these individuals, they would develop a better understanding of what the circumstances were that created their individual situations, and a better understanding that there's no easy fix to address the problem. So I think that the students really were sympathetic to the idea of low-income people trying to get by and sympathetic to their situations, but they really didn't understand the complexity of those situations.
John Boland, thank you very much for your time.
Certainly. Enjoyed it.
John Boland is Professor Emeritus at the University of Alabama. He will speak on Tuesday at Western Michigan University. You can find a link with more details at WMUK.org. Links with more information, longer versions of interviews on West Southwest, and past programs can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.